Welcome to Watchmen on the Wall, a daily outreach of Southwest Radio Ministries and SWRC.com. God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. Today, Dennis Cuddy is back with more insight and analysis on the plans of the power elite and what he sees behind the modern-day conspiracy theories. Friends, we are only one day away from the Mysteries of the Bibleverse event. This Friday and Saturday, June 7th and 8th, in the Cincinnati area. The lineup of speakers include Derek Gilbert, Rudy Landa, Michael Hoggard, Micah Van Hus, Greg Patton, and many others. For a complete listing of speakers and topics, and a link to special hotel rates, visit the events page of our website, swrc.com. Giants, UFOs, demons, secret societies, the topics your Sunday school teacher didn't talk about are all covered at the Mysteries of the Bibleverse event tomorrow and Saturday. Registration is still open. Visit the events page of our website, swrc.com, and register today. You can also register by calling 1-800-652-1144. That's 1-800-652-1144. Mysteries of the Bibleverse, June 7th and 8th, tomorrow and Saturday in Cincinnati. Now, here's today's host, Micah Van Hus.
Welcome to the program today. I'm your host, Micah Van Hus. I host Marginal Mysteries for Southwest Radio Ministries. And today we're continuing our discussion, Conspiracy 2 and Secret Nazi Plan, with Dr. Dennis Cuddy. How are you doing today, Dr. Cuddy?
Oh, I'm fairly well today.
It's a beautiful day here in Northeast Tennessee, a loving summertime. Last time we talked about Common Core, it's kind of where we ended it. I want to pick up with the politics of everything that's going on. And of course, we're in an election year here right now. We got Donald Trump in court cases, Joe Biden giving us out of control inflation. One of the things you do talk about in conspiracy is the predetermined outcomes of elections. How do you feel? Give us a little bit of information on that and what you think may go on this year.
Well, there are various societies who are involved. I mentioned Cecil Rhodes Society of the Elect. You have Skull and Bones with the Bushes involved in that. There are individuals who have planned. The plan was they would alternate power beginning in the late 1800s and thus make the public think they actually had a choice. But you really don't have a choice. All of these people are pre-planned. And it goes way back, and I know this because I was going to be part of it, except I asked them too many questions. They don't like to be questioned. They like obedience. If you look at Clinton, if you look at Obama, if you look at all of these people, they were planned way, way in advance. So for example, Obama, his mother is Ann Dunham, and she grew up in Kansas, and near them was an individual who was an openly communist. He was very, very influential on Ann and would be on her son, Barack Obama. And when the family moved to Seattle, he moved to Seattle. When the family moved to Hawaii, he moved to Hawaii. And in Obama's own autobiography, he refers to this guy as Papa, not the guy who's supposed to be his papa. So this fellow has a tremendous influence on Obama. And so if you look at various things regarding Barack Obama, on the back of his book, where he's describing himself, you know, you write a blurb about yourself and so on. Barack Obama, on his own autobiography, until he was running for president, put, "I am Barack Obama, born in Kenya." Now, he says that. It's not somebody else. He says it. And then there's his grandmother who said she was there when he was birthed, and they shut her up rather quickly. And so what you have is he would apply for a scholarship to a college, and one of the requirements of the scholarship was that you be foreign-born. So there's all these indications that he was not born. Mm-hmm. Plus, he doesn't even look like his real father. But he does have the upper part, the middle of his upper lip does look like this fellow who was the open communist, who he called Papa. And so he goes to Occidental College. He gets the scholarship, goes to Occidental College, which is in California. And I know something about that because when I was in the Reagan administration, one of my jobs was to be with this council, this presidential advisory council. And the head of that was our president. And I used to do things for him. He would, you know, I'd write an article and he'd sign his name to it and so forth. That's just part of the job like that. And he asked me, let me know, Dennis, if there's anything I can do for you. So he's a mover and shaker. And he was one of these people who you would send someone to, like Barack Obama, and they'd watch him. They just watch him to be sure that they were okay, they're developing. So after a couple of years, he transfers to Columbia University. Why? Because at that time, Zbigniew Brzezinski, who had been Jimmy Carter's national security advisor and also the director of the Trilateral Commission, had a chance to get there. You know, his previous jobs were ending, so he goes to Columbia. And when they interviewed the some 400 members of his graduating class major, nobody can remember Barack Obama going to class, but they do remember spending a lot of time with Brzezinski, because Brzezinski is the one who's giving him his marching orders. You know, All right, here's what you're going to do, Barack, for us. We've selected you years ago. Same thing with Bill Clinton when he went to Georgetown. You know, you might wonder why a Southern Baptist boy is going to a Jesuit institution like Georgetown. And it's the same thing as the case, because John Foster Dulles, who, along with his Secretary of State, along with his brother Alan Dulles, who was head of the CIA and, you know, directing assassinations for the U.S., Saddam Hussein was a part of a six-member assassination team, and his assignment in 1959 from Dulles was to assassinate the prime minister of Iraq so he could come to power. Mm-hmm. Now, he's not real bright, and he botched it, so the CIA protects him so we could stick him in later. Same thing happened with Gaddafi in Libya and so forth and so on. What happens is the Clinton would go there, and he was mentored by Carol Quigley, Professor Carol Quigley, and Carol Quigley wrote a book called Tragedy and Hope, which is about secret societies. And Quigley's view was the tragedy was that the American people managed their own affairs. The hope was that these power elite secret society guys would actually run things, because they're smart and we're stupid. And there is a certain amount of logic to that. The point is, these people don't just become president. You know, just be, oh, look, he's running. Oh, we haven't seen all that. They're planned way in advance. In the campaign with Donald Trump in 2016, what happens is Bill Clinton has a private conversation with Donald Trump, and he encourages him to run. Now, remember, Hillary's running already. Mm-hmm. You're going to run. But he says, Donald, why don't you get in there? And Donald says, you know, I don't know. I'm not really, I got these children who aren't real bright, and they may screw up my businesses. But Clinton keeps trying to persuade him, says, come on, Donald, get in there and run. I wrote this up in the Wall Street Journal. And he says, look, Donald, there's going to be 17 or so people running. You don't even have to get a majority. And he didn't at first, you know, in the primaries. He only got 37% of plurality. Yeah. But then he built and built and built some more. All right. So what happens then is that's 2015. So by 2016, when the campaign is beginning in earnest, and like I said, I don't just say stuff. I have documentation. What you have is, and this is very important, I have a couple of emails. A leading Democrat strategist's name is Bill Ivey, I-V-E-Y. And he's writing to John Podesta, who's Hillary campaign manager. I think it's like March 15th or something like that. He gives a lot of, you know, his analysis. But the thing that caught my eye is that they have created, it didn't say, let's do this. It's, we have already done this, created an unaware and compliant citizenry. We've done it. You know, it's not something we got to work at. We've done it unaware. In other words, they're clueless, and we can manipulate them. Now, think about that. I mean, when I hang up the phone call and you're walking around, you know, eating lunch, think about they have already created an unaware and compliant citizenry. That statement alone is mind-boggling. Mm. But they've done it. And they've done it a long time ago. And I can go into Edward Bernays and Sigmund Freud's nephew and how they did it and the examples of how they got women to start smoking and stuff like that when, you know, women used to be smarter than men.
Are these Rush Limbaugh's low-information voters?
Yeah. Actually, I have another article in another little publication giving examples of how Rush Limbaugh really does believe in his conspiracy. The thing that ticked Rush off was when they started saying Bill Buckley, you know, was Skull and Bones and part of this. Well, yeah, Bill Buckley was in Skull and Bones Secret Society at Yale, and he was part of this. Rush was just very, very loyal to William F. Buckley. There was more to Buckley than meets the eye, anyway. I put some quotes. My Rush himself would seem to indicate that he was still open to the idea. He once said, there are forces, powerful forces behind NAFTA and GATT that would indicate that he still believed in the sort of secret societies and powerful people manipulating things.
How do you think that the power elite plan to try to influence this year's election?
The same way that they did the last time. And I think Donald Trump didn't look at the right things. For example, I have a chapter on Iowa surveilled, and Donald Trump believed that his campaign was surveilled. The thing is, they went looking through FISA warrants. Well, if you're going to do something you shouldn't be doing, you're not going to do the proper routine of getting a FISA warrant. They do something different. They would do what they did to me. Maybe, I don't know, but this is one way they could have done it. They gave me the same phone number, home phone number, as they did President Nixon's secretary, Rosemary Woods. So if anybody caught them, they could say, oh, we were just helping, you know, helping Rosemary. She was getting annoying calls from Latin America. They used to call them, say, is Rosemary there? Is Rosemary there? I said, no, Rosemary's not here. But they were doing it. And you say, oh, that's just an amazing, just a coincidence. No, it's not. Then I contacted the phone company, and they said, oh, we'll change it. They didn't change it. They kept it next year, which showed me that they had intended to do that. So they would have intended to do it to Donald Trump, just like they intended to do it to me. That's one thing Trump did not concentrate on. But besides that, what you have is a hypocrisy on the part of the press with Trump, for example. They blame Donald Trump for the riot at the Capitol, okay? Donald Trump actually said, be peaceful. I mean, he said, be peaceful. But even if you were to say, yeah, there were things that should not have been done, you have to look at the fact that Enrico Tarrio, head of the Proud Boys, was also a police and government informant. So you have these people who are these informants also participating in the rioting. You also have a situation where Nancy Pelosi had said about taking 100,000 rioters taken over the capital of Wisconsin. She said, and the press didn't make anything of this, she said, this is a great display of democracy in action, and I'm in solidarity with you. Now, one of the guys who was there also showed up at January 6th, right? And he just happened to be at the exact place to film that woman who died getting shot. He just happened to be able to film her and sell that film to, I think it's CNN and ABC or one of them for $25,000. He just happened to be there, right? Mm-hmm. It makes you wonder about that. But Nancy Pelosi also said that she didn't understand why there weren't insurrections, which is, you know, rioting and all, in every state, not just the capital of Washington, every single state, 50 states, regarding Trump's policies on the southern border. Press didn't mention that. That's another point of hypocrisy. And lastly, in August, just before the election, there was a protest supported by the left, the Democrats, and the press, at the White House. All right? It turned into a riot, an insurrection, where they used bricks, bats, bottles, fireworks, bodily fluids, and so forth. But the press is okay, apparently, with that. So when Trump is saying something on January 6th, this is horrible, right? But when Pelosi says much worse, they did, that's okay. So there's a level of hypocrisy regarding their position on Trump and their position on Nancy Pelosi, who was sitting in judgment at the House committee regarding this riot. It just shows blatantly the hypocrisy of the press, and they'll do it again this time. But besides that, there is still the question of voter fraud plus something else. Now, with voter fraud, it's a no fraud. Don't worry about writing. There's a publication called American Thinker. It's a good publication, not right-wing, left-wing. It's just very good document and so forth and so on. And the title, I think, is by Jay Livingstone, I think his name is. title is Meet the Technology That is Uncovering Voter Fraud. And it's very detailed about how there really was fraud. But beyond fraud, there's something even worse that is really rather scary. There's a Dr. Epstein, Robert Epstein. Now, this guy cannot be, you know, challenged by the press because he was a liberal. He said, I'm a liberal, and I'm glad Biden won. But he said, I'm horrified as to how they pulled it off. And what he does is he goes through things which aren't fraud, but he uses Google as an example. And Google's seed money was put up by the National Security Agency and the CIA, and they share information all the time. What happens is they didn't concentrate on everybody. They say, well, the Democrats are going to vote that way and the Republicans that way. So they concentrated on the middle, you know, the 20% in the middle who could be swung either way. And one of the techniques is they would take a statement like Trump's immigration policy. You know, he did a scientific study, this Robert Epstein. And he wouldn't say Trump's an idiot or Trump's a genius, just Trump's immigration policy. And what Google would do is they would put the first 10 as negative for Trump, and then the next 10 as positive. Mm-hmm. But they know that most people don't go beyond the first 10 things, so they wound up pushing that way. Also, Google is monitoring you listening to this, and your home. Because the new digital thermostats, Google bought that company. They bought the company that has the new digital thermostats, and they have a little listening device in it. And I told that to this one fellow after I wrote up this article, and he says, you know, I thought something was suspicious. He said, I went home to test this, and I sat down and I turned everything off, my iPad, his cell phone, everything off, TV, everything off. And I just started talking and, you know, to myself. And I put in there a product that I never use, like prune juice, and a particular brand, like, let's say, Smith's prune juice. And he'd go, blah, 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 Smith's prune juice, blah, 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 Smith's prune juice, blah, 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 Smith's prune juice. He said within 1 hour, there was an ad for Smith's prune juice on my social media. Yeah. Now, they're doing that with you. If you have these new digital thermostats, they're learning about your sex life and everything under the sun. But what I do is give documentation. So what I did is I went and looked at Herman Dinsmore's book, All the News That Fits. The motto of the New York Times is All the News That Fit to Print. You will find in that book where Herman Dinsmore, who was foreign editor of the Times from 1950 to 1960, admits it. He said, yeah, that's right. We slanted news towards the communists. And then if you said there's a lot of communists infiltrating the government, they say, you're crazy. You're a McCarthyite. You're a wacko. What I do there is I look at, you remember Watergate? You had Woodward and Bernstein. Well, Bernstein wrote a book called Sons' Loyalties. And in there, the book is an interview with his parents. And his father says, look, Carl, I'm concerned about this book you're writing because you're saying McCarthy's right. And then his father says, and he was right, because me and my wife were members of the Communist Party in the U.S. in the Washington, D.C. area. And we were becoming a threat, and we were becoming a power in the government. So they will deny stuff. And the average person said, well, it's the Washington Post, New York Times, it must be true. No, no, not necessarily, especially with the Times. Now, I'm going to defer a little bit to the Washington Post because they did actually print a lot of my stuff. When I was with the Reagan administration, I was a problem solver. I got voluntary prayer back in the schools. I ended what was called forced busing. I had articles in Oklahoma City newspaper, the Daily Oklahoman, about, you know, how it did. And I used to catch flack from the Harvard types. It was amazing how those dummies couldn't even solve an elementary school percentage question, because to take a segregated school system and make it integrated where each school, let's say, it's a 70% white, 30% black, and you want to make each school 70% white, what percentage of blacks and whites would you have to bus? And then the Harvard types never got it right. You have to bus an inverse proportion. You would have to bus, you know, 70% of the black kids and only 30% of the white kids. Like where I am, 90% of the busing burden fell on blacks. Now, if you're doing that, obviously you're going to be behind academically. You can't study on a school bus. And so you're denying an hour a day study time to blacks that you weren't denying to whites. So I ended that. Number of other problems they had. Abortion I developed the strategy that would end abortion, and sure enough, they did it. I would try to make it simple. You know, you can't make things really complicated. For example, I would say to someone, like, if you were debating someone on abortion, you who are listening to this show, just ask them, why do you think your mother should be able to kill you? You know, why? Just ask them that question. And all of a sudden, you'll see them, their eyes start to think, yeah, I hadn't thought of that before. And you can really persuade people to change their position to pro-life like that.
So we've been talking about the power player, the United States. So let's get a little bit more into the globalists as we close out the program. Who are the power elite, and what is their plan overall, in your opinion, and in your books?
The power elite's overall plan, and it goes back at least 200 years. I'll link this up with secret societies. There's a book by James Billington, who is a Librarian of Congress and a Rhodes Scholar, called Fire in the Minds of Men. And he has a daughter, Susan Billington, who's also a Rhodes Scholar. It's a quite good book. And so I called him up one day, and I said, James, could you make me a copy of this book? It's by John Wood in 1802. The reason I was asking him to do that was because it had the oath of the democratic society here, and I matched it to the oath of the original Bavarian Illuminati, and they were identical. They were absolutely identical. And so I put a quote, let's say, where George Washington is responding to a Reverend Snyder in 1798. And Snyder is asking George, do you know that the Illuminati's here? And George said, yes, I do know that the Illuminati is here. And you can get these actual documents in the handwritten form from American Memory on the Library of Congress website. Just type in to Illuminati or something, and these things will come up for your research purposes. The secret societies go way back, and the ultimate goal they have is a world socialist government, and they do that through a dialectical process. First, they created communism, and people think about Karl Marx and communism, but he really wasn't. Marx was a dummy, evil. He wrote a poem called Uhlenheim, which sounds crazy, satanic, you know. It would be great to destroy the world, including myself. And he didn't support his wife and children. He's a nasty guy. And I have some documents that go further into that. What happens is the first commune was here in New Harmony, Indiana. And it was the Marquis de Lafayette was participating in our revolution, and he helped us gain a victory. And then the French Revolution came along, and he liked that. But the second phase of the French Revolution was bloodier than the first, and they were just guillotining everybody. So he, the Marquis de Lafayette, came over here again, and he brought this woman named, well, her nickname was Fanny Wright. It was Madame Francoise d'Arusman. But she was a free love kind of girl, and she joined up with the Owenites, and they were utilitarians in England, to form the first commune in New Harmony, Indiana. Now, why do you say, why would they go out into the sticks? Because they wanted to be able to elect a member of Congress. So that was Robert Dale Owen. Now, why would he want to run for Congress? Because part of their plan, that was 1825, was in 1828, they would form the Working Men's Party, you know, Workers of the World Unite, Marx said. But they're much, much sooner than Marx. So Working Men's Party, to use education and labor as part of their method to gain their purposes. Robert Dale Owen, now why would he want to be in Congress? Because they were going to undermine Christianity. He introduced legislation to have the Smithsonian Institution, you all heard of Smithsonian, built, and that was to be the alternative to biblical education. At first, education here was the McGuffey Reader, you know, and A. and Adams, Fall, We've Sinned It All. So they want to wipe out Christianity and replace it with science. And so the Smithsonian was going to be the temple, and there was Garibaldi. Garibaldi's interesting because a young Madame Blavatsky had linked up with him, and she got wounded at the Battle of Montana, which is a city in Italy. And they gave her time to pause, and then she reflects and corrects. And she joins up with Albert Pike, who revised the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry and made it Luciferian. And if you look at Pike's books, like Morals and Dogma, all Freemasons used to be given that. He was saying there about, I think, phase 321, oh, Lucifer, son of the morning, you're great, and all this sort of stuff. And later on, he says, the world will come to us for its pontiffs and sovereigns, you know, second ladies. Now, in case you're thinking I'm condemning these Freemasons, most Freemasons, according to the book, according to Pike, are misled. He says that. He said, we deliberately mislead most of the young Masons so that they just think, you know, it's all business and business contacts and so forth and so on. They're perfectly innocent guys. Most Freemasons are. They're clueless about what the purpose of the Freemasons really was. You have these secret societies, which are part of this. So the first, they create communism. Now, then you have to create Nazism, because you have to create the opposite. The dialectical process is a thesis, an antithesis, and then you sort of compromise in the middle, right? So you're going to create communism, you know, left wing, then you create Nazism, the right wing, and the synthesis would be socialism in the middle. So that's the ultimate goal, a world of socialist government. And I put the quotes and the sources and all, where you can find this stuff out.
And that falls in line with Albert Pike's prediction of the three world wars, if I'm not mistaken. Folks,
that's right, because religion is a big part of it. And that's why this Hamas thing, that's part of a fulfillment of the secret Nazi plan. And I wrote an article on News Reviews about that, if your listeners want to look at that.
Folks, you've been listening to Dr. Dennis Cuddy on his book Conspiracy and Conspiracy 2. You can get those books from Southwest Radio Ministries at 800-652-1144 or at swrc.com.
Make sure you have Dennis Cuddy's books as part of your library. The books Conspiracy, Conspiracy 2, The Road to Socialism in the New World Order, and The Power Elite, Their History and Future are all titles that delve deeply into the plans, plots, and schemes changing our culture, the country, and the world. Based on his years as a political and economic risk analyst, historian, and senior associate with the U.S. Department of Education, Dennis Cuddy's books traces the evolution of evil from its roots in a falling away in the 1950s to the media attacks and undeserved praise of presidents and government to the debacle of COVID-19 and its aftermath. View contemporary conspiracies through the eyes of a former university instructor and feel better prepared for the mayhem to come. Order the Dennis Cuddy collection of books today when you call 1-800-652-1144. That's 1-800-652-1144. You can also order the Dennis Cuddy collection on our website, swrc.com. Tomorrow, Mac Dominic will explore interdimensional rebellion. Be sure to tune in on your favorite radio station or by subscribing to our daily Watchmen on the Wall podcast. Watchmen on the Wall is a production of Southwest Radio Ministries and is supported by faithful listeners like you. Visit swrc.com.